Hey, it's John Canzano. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe. And thanks to all the listeners and all of our sponsors who help make the Bald-Faced Truth the number one sports radio show in Portland. Enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
John Canzano.
John Canzano.
He's good. He's good. He says his opinion and it's usually right on, I think.
Love him.
That guy's awesome, man. Absolutely love him.
He's dead sexy.
Best radio journalist there is around. Tells it like it is. And he's just right on point. He's sharp, man. Love John Canzano.
Bringing up something that's probably the average sports fan watching the game didn't pick up on.
I mean, I like the guy. I listen to him every day.
Yeah. Straightforward and to the point.
Hate him.
Not a big fan.
Hate him. Too opinionated.
You don't want to give nobody a second chance.
Trump. Most of his opinions I don't really agree with.
He just sounds like an egotistical idiot.
Love to hate him.
Sometimes I think he's all right, and sometimes I think he's a lousy writer.
I'll read his column, but I am not a fan of John Canzano.
Bald-faced truth teller.
I really don't like John Canzano.
Who is he to judge?
I like that he's controversial, I guess.
Pretty good. He's not afraid to call people on their crap.
You love him or you hate him.
It's a love-hate relationship.
I love John Canzano. He's a cool dude.
Now, from the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth on 750 The Game.
You know, Brent Musburger called his last game as a play-by-play broadcaster. Coming up at 1 o'clock, Brian Mulvilson. He used to be Brent Musburger's spotter for years. Rose Bowls. Brian Mulvilson would share stories of Brent Musburger coming up 1 o'clock. We also go to Vegas. Vegas, baby. Because the Super Bowl is on, and I'm going to talk about the Super Bowl today. We're going to deal with this Super Bowl L.I. Lee. We're going to deal with this Super Bowl because we're going to Vegas to talk to the sports book at the Westgate. Jay Cornegay will be joining us again. What's the action been like? Where's the line? Let's talk about those proposition bets again. We'll talk about the Super Bowl on today's show. And again, because it's my new toy, I'm going to start with this. Are you buying or are you selling?
What are you buying? What are you selling?
See how I set that up? I'm getting better, Kiki.
Yeah, you're getting it. You're getting it.
All right, there's a story today coming out of the Super Bowl city of Houston about Bill Belichick. He's undergone a makeover. I don't know if you noticed on Media Day, I don't know if you noticed during some of the news conferences, that Mr. Hoodie, who used to be bundled up with a little ski cap on and his hoodie pulled over it and his headset over the hoodie, he's embracing style. He's wearing a sport coat. He had a tie on and a button-up shirt at one point. Is something going on with Bill Belichick? And are you buying or selling the hoodie? Because Belichick himself appears to be selling. I kind of liked that the guy wore his own thing. And I guess what I want to ask you, the listener, do you care how your coach dresses? NBA coaches, we see some guys with some impeccable style. And you had Dr. Jack in his plaid coat. And you've got Terry Stotts, who will wear it to honor Dr. Jack. And you just got some guys in the NBA who are dressers. And I think it kind of suits itself to the way the games are televised in the NBA. You see a lot of the coach. And so the coach is always a good guy, good dresser, whatever. But Bill Belichick, the disappearance of the hoodie. Are you buying or selling? This is the transformation of Bill Belichick. He's undergone a clothing change. Does it mean that Bill Belichick has changed at all? Are you buying or selling the way Bill Belichick dresses in a suit and tie? Me?
Sell.
I liked him in the hoodie. I liked that he was different. I liked that here was a guy that could be different than other coaches, looked like he didn't care about how he was dressing. So I am selling the idea of this subtle clothing change by Bill Belichick. Is he embracing style? Is something else going on? I don't care. I don't see the hoodie, and I don't like it. I like the fact that he was different than other people. I even like that he's a little bit difficult. I may complain about it, but I secretly like it. Bill Belichick as a different personality. Also, Super Bowl. Here's a Super Bowl that people are predicting. You know, you've got the Patriots. You have a historic Atlanta offense. You've got all these angles to the Super Bowl. Are you buying the idea that this game is going to be a rout one way or the other? Are you buying the idea that the Atlanta Falcons could run away with this thing? Or that the New England Patriots could run away with this thing? I hear people saying, look, this could be a blowout. Me?
Sell.
You may predict a route. You may predict the idea that Tom Brady's not easy to be beat in the playoffs. You may look at the Falcons' dominant offense against the Patriots' dominant defense, and you may say something will have to give there. But I'm not buying that. I'm selling the idea of the Super Bowl as a blowout, and here's why. I watched the NFL this season. I saw more close games than at any other season in NFL history. More games decided by 7 points or less. More come-from-behind victories in the final possession of games all year long. And I think that this is just the game that the NFL is. You're never really out of it. I think we've seen better Super Bowls because of that. So I'm selling the idea that this will be a blowout. Are you buying or selling this as a blowout? My third topic in our buy-sell segment, which I start every show with for the last 2 days, relates to Willie Taggart. He came on yesterday's radio show on National Signing Day, and I guess I was a little disappointed that he not only used his performance here yesterday, but his news conference yesterday to, I felt like he was blaming the media. He was calling out Andrew Greif's story. He called it bogus. He went out of his way to do so. And yet, here was, you know, Willie Taggart on a day that should have been spent celebrating a great signing class, taking a defensive posture.
That weightlifting situation was bogus. It wasn't what it was reported, and they had an opportunity to talk to the young man when they came here on our campus. They had a chance to sit down with our players and a player panel where the coaches wasn't in there, and they were allowed to ask them anything they wanted to, and they felt really good when they left out of there about what we're doing here and what we're how we're trying to help our young people. So that part of it, again, they understood who we were and understood that, again, that was a bogus story, and it's sad that it was reported the way that it was.
What bothered me about Willie yesterday was, A, he's just spent so much time in a defensive posture. And my question was to Willie was, how do you deal with recruits and recruits' parents who are asking you questions about the DUI with your assistant coach, David Reeves, and the strength and conditioning issue that put three players in the hospital? And what I think Willie should have said was, anytime three players are in the hospital, it's something you got to look at inside your program. You got to look at what you're doing. And I don't condone what David Reeves did. But instead, he took a defensive posture. And I think some of it had to do with the fact that, A, he probably wasn't on board with the suspension of his strength and conditioning coach from the beginning. And I think he's on a stage at Oregon that he's never been on before. He was out South Florida. He was out Western Kentucky. I think he's kind of realizing as he looks around that, hey, I'm on a bigger stage now. And I also think he was fried. I think he was fried from 2 months of recruiting, running around, being up at 3 a.m, national letters of intent. So I cut him a break there. I also said to him that you can't come out of the gate saying, blame no one, make no excuses, and then come on and say, I'm blaming the media and I'm blaming that story and this was bogus. And your coach got suspended. You had to apologize publicly. Kind of ends there. And if there was an issue, you should have said something then, not now, not 2 weeks later, for an issue that he clearly hasn't let go of. So are you buying or selling Willie Taggart's performance yesterday on the BFT radio show? And yesterday at his news conferences.
Sell.
I thought it wasn't his finest moment. I'm selling it. I thought he was great in his introductory news conference. I thought he won the day. He won the news conference. I think he's a good hire. But I also think it was kind of a bad look yesterday. And a look that maybe a more seasoned, more polished coach wouldn't have had. 417-7575. Are you buying or selling the dress code? Bill Belichick in a hoodie, Bill Belichick in a suit. He's transformed. Are you buying Bill Belichick as a better dressing coach? And this game, the Super Bowl, are you buying the notion, the prevailing notion, that this will be like one of those old typical Super Bowl blowouts? The Niners over the Denver Broncos, the Cowboys over the Bills. Are you buying that this Super Bowl is going to be a blowout? Or are you selling that? And Willie Taggart's performance, thirdly and lastly, are you buying or selling the performance itself? I know some people that said, you know, I'm buying it because it's such a great correction to what Mark Helfrich was once upon a time. And I agree with that. It was a tremendous correction. And I don't expect that we're always going to agree. We're just, you're not, by definition, a head football coach, a columnist, a radio show host, we're going to be at odds by definition of our jobs. Willie Taggart shouldn't want that story public, shouldn't want to talk about this stuff, shouldn't want to have to address it with recruits. And as a reporter or a columnist, you should want to talk about this stuff. You should want him to address it. You should want him to take that head on. I appreciated that he came on the show. I appreciated the exchange. I thought it was a pretty fair back and forth. But at the end of it, I just think we should have been talking in the end less about the he said, she said of what happened and more about, you know, National Signing Day and Willie's recruiting class. 417-7575, weigh in on those things. Mike, you're in Washougal. Are you buying or selling, and what are you buying and selling?
Well, I mean, you hit on so many points. Your interview yesterday with Taggart and the OSU guy, I mean, if I didn't know anything, I would definitely go with, what's his name, Gary Anderson?
Yeah.
I would definitely go with him. I mean, his heart and soul is in his program. It was so obvious, as opposed to being, you know, a U of O guy who, you know, okay, I got to keep the culture going type of thing. But anyways, getting back to the original point, going back to the mid-70s, Tom Landry exemplified the Dallas Cowboys with his fedora and his suit and everything. I mean, he was king. I mean, and I think his team really exemplified his structure and his ideology, as opposed to, how do I put this? I'm trying to be very polite. Paul Allen, when he shows up at a game, I used to be a photographer for a very prominent newspaper. You know who it is. He would show up like he just stopped off at the Goodwill to dress himself. You know, it's like the dude needs a stylist. I mean, at least look the part. Even if you're not the part, at least look like it.
I'm not as into the dress code for the owner as I am the coach. Because when you're the owner and you've got screw you money, I think you could probably dress how you want to dress. And it's what I think it's part of the charm of Phil Knight. Like, you'll see Phil Knight, he's got like the same acid wash jeans on and the sport coat. I was talking yesterday about it. My wife looked at my jeans when I was leaving the house and she was like, "Your jeans are ratty. You need some new clothes." Like, guys, you relate to that. Like, we all need somebody to be like, "Hey, man, not a good look." But when you are Phil Knight or Paul Allen, or you're on that stratosphere of wealth, I do think there's something in looking like you don't care that I like. Like Phil Knight, to me, he's got the Nike sneakers on. He's got the dash wash jeans. He's got that same black sport coat and that same black Nike hat. Like, the guy could wear a $5,000 Armani suit if he wanted to, but he's just like, this is what I want to wear. Like, this is who I am. And I kind of appreciate that. The problem I have more with Paul Allen is that he's frankly just not paying attention at the games. He looks like he's not interested in what's going on the court. Like, Kiki, you texted me a photo earlier this year. It was in overtime of the game. No time left on the clock. Ball's in the air. Are they going to a third overtime? Mm-hmm. And Paul's on his phone.
Yeah, that was shocking to me. He just had his head down for like 10 seconds and a really vital time. And I mean, to the point where I had enough time to see it, react, grab my phone, focus, take a picture, and it wasn't a good look at all. Brutal.
Yeah, I think the guy needs someone to teach him how to break in a ball cap, all right? Let's be true. Yeah, he needs that, but, you know, when you got screw you money.
Yeah, there's kind of, once you get to a certain point, I think there's that line in Billions that the guy uses, and he goes, "What's the point of being a billionaire if I can't have screw you money," kind of a thing. But I actually think I might be going off course here, but I think Belichick's kind of rebranding of himself, I think that has something to do with his new lady friend. I've been doing some Googling, and he's got a new lady friend. And
he looks handsome.
Well, he put a little kiss on her at the end of the game last week or the week before or whatever. And so I do see this one picture.
There's a woman involved in this.
See,
like Brian Urlacher growing hair all of a sudden.
She's spit shining him. I think she's trying to smooth out the edges, if you will.
He had on a dress shirt. It was pressed. He had one button undone. It was business casual for Belichick.
I suspect he's got new motivation, if you will.
He wears a dress shirt to a news conference now. And now he looks like a CEO. And so what happens? All right, guys, what happens at age 64 that you suddenly start dressing differently?
I'm looking right at it.
You're looking at her?
He's got a new blonde girlfriend.
Is she good looking?
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah, she's
cute.
The
hoodie wasn't cutting it.
She's cute. I'm just saying.
Is she younger than him?
I would. She's definitely not 60. He's 64?
Yep.
No, she's not 64.
She's not? How old is she? Eyeball her. Judge her right now.
Well, she's definitely, I'd say early 50s.
Her name's Linda Holiday.
Yep. Are you seeing what I'm seeing?
I haven't seen her photo yet. Oh, yeah, she's not 64.
See?
That's his girlfriend.
Yes. Right. I'm telling you.
I might follow her on Twitter now.
Yep.
She's kept low profile.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's not 64. She's got a little bit of a, she
kind
looks
of Christie
like
Brinkley.
I'm thinking she would have been a big fan of like the band Whitesnake in the 80s.
Oh, maybe.
You know what I mean?
She's cute.
You know what
she's,
I mean?
You know, she's not 25.
Heather Locklear kind of stunt double.
Uh-huh. I think she's got a Christie Brinkley thing going on. But she's definitely not 25, so that's good. But she's not 64 either. But I just, you know, I'm just spitballing here. I'm not the relationship guru, but
I'll tell you five facts that I found out about her now.
All right, let's hear it.
Five facts about Belichick's main squeeze.
Mm-hmm.
They met in a Florida nightclub in 2007. Okay.
Okay.
That's number one. Number two, she's really active on social media.
Okay.
She's all over Twitter and Instagram. And she put out a photo of Belichick and her dressed as pirates on Halloween.
Okay.
This is a guy that's age 64.
Yeah, see,
he's whipped.
That's what I'm saying. So if he's going to dress
the
up
hoodie?
Like a... Yeah, can you imagine trying to get Belichick...
Did you see this photo?
Belichick to be... Yeah,
Belichick is a pirate. He looks like...
So are you confirming my suspicion? Why his new motivation?
Hold on. She is a TV host and entrepreneur.
Okay.
She owns a clothing store that closed, and she's landed as a lifestyle correspondent for Style Boston, which airs on CBS Boston.
Okay.
About that. She is a beauty pageant lady.
Okay.
She was twice the runner-up for Miss Arkansas. Mrs. Wow. Arkansas, not Miss.
Okay.
Mrs. She's also been divorced three times.
Oh, all right. Well, keep on trying.
You judge her if she's got three divorces?
Yeah, maybe.
You start thinking things when people... At number three?
After three, I think you have to start going...
They're going, are you the problem?
That's a profession.
Yeah.
Once you've been married three times, I'm sorry. I kind of think that maybe that's a little harsh.
Here's the thing I noticed about him. There's a photo of them sitting courtside at a Celtics game.
Uh-huh. Look at his shoes.
His shoes.
That's the same picture. So, I mean, that's Belichick footwear.
Yeah.
But the top is, I think, influenced by, I'm sorry, what was her name?
Linda Holiday.
Linda. No, I like the fact that she's successful in her own right. That's fantastic. But I'm just thinking that if Belichick is dressing as a pirate...
Linda Holiday's dressing.
Linda is, she's an influence, and he's enjoying his relationship. Which is good for him.
How old is this woman, Linda Holiday? What's your guess on him? Have you seen the photo, Gliss? Have you looked at the photo? Or are you guys looking at the photo?
I saw it.
How old, Kellen?
I would say she's probably. I mean, she could be 55, 60.
Yeah. Oh,
with good surgery, but maybe 55.
Let me give you a hint. Always like shave a few below because you don't ever want to be over.
Yeah, but she's not like, listening to the show.
I know. I'm just giving out some advice.
Oh, like for guys.
Womanly advice. Yeah. If you think that she's 60, say like 54 And then you know what I mean? And then she'll correct you. She's like, oh, I'm actually 65.
They've been dating 8 years.
You know what I mean?
I treated it like an auction. That was my mistake.
See, yeah, you got to go the other way.
I did say 55 and then I went up. Yeah, it should have gone down.
She's 52.
Didn't I say that at the beginning?
Yeah,
I thought
she's
I said
52.
Early 50s.
Yeah, she's 52.
All right, so 12
she's
years.
She's got twin girls.
Okay.
And here's the other thing. They've been dating 8 years.
Oh, okay.
Eight years. The hoodie is not a commitment, man.
No, it's not. Apparently not.
But if she's a three-time divorcee,
mm-hmm.
isn't that wise of Bill Belichick, given his assets, to not be like husband number four?
Yeah, I would think so.
If he was your friend, wouldn't you be like, hey, slow your roll, Bill?
Okay, but you know, don't you think, though?
Why buy the cow, all
right,
that stuff?
Why? I think if you've had kids and you're 52, what's the point of getting married? You don't need to get married. If you know you're in a committed relationship, you've all had your lives and you have kids and this, that, and the other.
So this is just fun.
Yeah, it's fun. They're in a relationship. That's great. But you're right. They don't have to get married.
Let's go to Joe in Salem. Joe, what's up? Joe's speechless. Let's go to Kurt in Eugene. Kurt, what's going on?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Going well.
I'm really bummed that I missed the Taggart interview yesterday.
Yeah.
Not working to it, apparently. But
gotta quit that job of yours.
I hear you talking about style and mannerisms and Paul Allen on his phone in an overtime game. My comment is in regards to Mr. Helfrich and the fact that it just drove me crazy last year when on the sidelines in big games, he just would sit with his arms crossed and the only interaction you ever saw was with the refs, you know, possibly about a penalty or something. But, you know, I remember Chip always being in the boys, you know, the kids' faces, always interacting with them on and off the field. And I just saw, all I remember Helfrich was on the sidelines, arms crossed, as far as mannerisms.
Yeah, so and here's a, I hesitated to like bang too hard on Willie Taggart for his performance yesterday. And if you didn't hear the interview, go make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud or iTunes or go to 750thegame.com and grab the podcast of Willie Taggart, because I think it's worth a mention. And I had a local media member earlier of one of the TV stations, one of the reporters who called me this morning and was like, hey, that interview was really interesting with Taggart, the back and forth. And he walked into sort of a bad situation and then found himself having to dig out of it. If you are somebody who enjoys kind of listening to people authentically and as they are, that Willie Taggart interview was great. So I hesitate to bang on him because he's such a correction from Mark Helfrich. It was so boring. Wouldn't say anything, wouldn't reveal anything, wouldn't tell us anything, never was real. I never got an impression that I knew the guy. I feel like I already know Willie Taggart better. So I want to give Taggart credit in that sense that he's coming on, he's talking, and he's being real. There was no PC about what he said on yesterday's show. But that said, I still think the performance made him sound defensive. It made him sound like he was making excuses. It made him sound like he hadn't moved past whatever happened with the strength coach. And I think it hurt him on a day when he should have been talking about his recruits. All right, coming up, we'll talk more about Willie Taggart. We'll talk more about the Super Bowl matchup. Also, the Blazers, is it possible that they're lining themselves up to make a franchise-shifting trade? We'll talk about that next.
Hi, I'm Bill Walton. I can think, I can sleep, I can move, and I can ride my bike. I can dream, but what I can really do is I can listen to the bald-faced truth.
Thank you, Bill Walton. Appreciate that. Okay, so check this out. There is a ice storm ahead, they're saying.
Yes, I've heard this.
Not again. Not more. There's a local company called Corkers that does phenomenal boots, okay? And if you go into REI or one of the big-time stores, you'll see Corkers in there. Phenomenal boots. There's a guy named Brian Cheney and his dad who have founded this company. They run this company. It's a nice-sized company headquartered here in Portland. Brian stopped by and brought a pair of his boots. And what makes Corkers special is they have these interchangeable soles on the boots. I mean, they're phenomenal boots anyway, but then you can put on like studded traction for snow and ice. You can have the normal, traditional tread. If you don't want that, it just pops on and off. They also have cleats that are available that you can strap on to your own shoes. He's doing a really cool thing. And basically, how I would describe it is four-wheel drive for your feet. You're adding studded tires to your feet. And what Brian is offering for people who want to not get left out in the cold during this ice storm is a very cool thing. He is offering 20% off to BFT listeners. And if you buy the boots at Corkers.com, and Corkers is K-O-R-K-E-R-S, so it's Corkers with a K. If you buy the boots at Corkers.com and you use the promo code STORM, you'll get 20% off the boots, and he'll make a donation from every sale to the Bald Faced Truth Foundation. So if you're somebody who, like in the last snowstorm, was sitting there going, I wish I had better boots. I wish I had boots to get up the driveway. If you slipped, I had a friend who slipped in the parking lot of the gym. He slipped and knocked himself out. He's still having issues. Like, his head's not right. So if you're somebody who, during that last snowstorm, was going, I wish I had better boots, go to Corkers.com. You make a purchase there of cleats or boots. You get 20% off. The BFT Foundation wins because they get a donation from every sale, and he has same-day shipping on the orders before 2 o'clock. So if you're like in the Portland area, and you go to Corkers.com, use the promo code STORM, you're going to get a great deal on these boots that are just top of line, and you're going to get same-day shipping locally. So we're good to go. Corkers.com, that's Corkers with a K. And the boots, Kiki, you've seen the boots. I mean, they're just
I have. I actually ridiculous. Follow them on Instagram. They do great work, and they have really good all sorts of things for different weather. And I saw a video, actually, in the last ice storm. I believe it was with his son.
Yeah.
And he was using the, I think so, right? He was walking up the driveway.
Carrying his son.
Yeah. And it just completely fine. And ridiculous ice. It's crazy.
Well, I'm gonna tweet this out as well. The interchangeable sole, like, it's such a cool thing because, you know, you think about it, it's like, yeah, you're right. Like, instead of having to change shoes, you just pop that baby off.
You put the
studded one on. Now you're in ice and you're good.
Yeah.
So I know our news people here at KXL, Brian came by and he brought me a pair of the boots. And he was like, these are, and I looked at the boots, I pulled them out. And the news people all were kind of gathering around going, this is good. They're like, this is a news story.
Yeah, I think Freddie's over there. He's fighting for those boots.
And Lars Larson was like, let me see those boots. And like, it was, I'm size 11.
Yeah,
like, you know,
yeah.
It was like, it was a big deal. And the bottom line is he's trying to do something for the BFT Foundation, help kids in the community. And that's a bigger thing. All right, I want to talk about the Blazers. I want to talk about the Blazers possibly positioning themselves to make a deal. When you talk about assets that the Blazers have, when you look at the Blazers, I guess the State of the Union with the Blazers roster, and we talked yesterday about Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum, and, you know, would you, if you're the Blazers, which of those two guys would you hitch your wagon to? Because I think if you mess that up, you end up, you know, sacrificing the wrong player. You end up setting the franchise back a decade. You have Damian Lillard, who obviously at a max contract in a league that everybody's overpaid, that's not a deterrent for people. He's a nice player. Of course he'd be attractive. I want to look more at guys like Alan Crabb and Evan Turner today, and Myers Leonard and Mo Harkless and Al-Farouq Aminu and Festus Ezeli. The guys that are making Ed Davis money, $6 million plus, and all the way up to maybe Alan Crabb money at 18 and a half. Of those guys, and I'm just going to throw the names out there, I want you to tell me who the Blazers must keep. And tell me what trade bait looks like to you. Because I look at Alan Crabb at $18.5 million, and let's just forget his salary. He's making too much money for what he does, and it's part of the problem. But is he a guy you have to have? I don't think Alan Crabb is, nor do I think Evan Turner is a guy you have to have. Myers Leonard, you don't have to have him. Mo Harkless, Al-Farouq Aminu, Festus Ezeli, Ed Davis. Of that stable, is there a player? And I know it's asking a lot because all you in Portland, you included, Kiki, all of you people here in Portland, maybe even Gliss, You fall in love with these marginal role players in the NBA, unlike any other city. You overvalue them. You think your guys are better than than they really are. In that group that I just mentioned, Alan Crabb and Evan Turner, Myers Leonard, Mo Harkless, Al-Farouq Aminu, Festus Ezeli, and Ed Davis, who are your must-keep players? Who do you have to keep? 417-7575, and who's trade bait? Because I think there's a bunch of trade bait in there. Is it all chum?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think you're right. I just I resist the notion of getting rid of Dame and CJ, but that was yesterday's show. But now we're moving on. I like maybe packaging up Myers Leonard and maybe Evan Turner. I like Evan Turner, but he's new.
Tell me who you have to keep. Who do you have to keep?
Harkless.
You like Mo Harkless?
Mm-hmm.
You like the way he plays?
I do.
Al-Farouq Aminu.
I like him too.
Okay.
So you can
get rid of the rest. Let's expand the net. You haven't seen Festus Ezeli. Are you ready to give up on him?
Yeah, I am. For the reason that I haven't seen him yet.
You're
so
done.
I have
you're not in love yet.
Yeah, I'm not
in love
yet.
You haven't been on
a date. Nope. We haven't even dated. We haven't even gone out yet.
Yeah.
So I can take his number out of my phone.
So emotional here in Portland.
I know.
It's
and
not...
I never say that I'm not. I'm like the average Blazer fan.
All right. Gliss, who do you have to have in that stable? Because the rest has to be trade bait.
I agree with Kiki. I like Mo Harkless a lot. He's the one, you know, he's still very young. And if you remember last year when they had that late run, he was a huge part of that when he got put in the starting lineup.
I like the way he plays.
Yeah. And he,
I relate to the way he plays.
Yeah. He does a lot of little things, I think.
That's me in a 24-hour fitness pickup game, which means nothing because in a 24-hour pickup game, you need scorers.
I would say the guy that I would look to trade is probably Alan Crabb, but his contract is so big, I think it'd be tough. He's been playing better.
It is, but by today's standards, he's not a problem. He's not a problem player. He can still play. You can get a guy back who's kind of a problem or an expiring contract. You can get a guy back and give up an Alan Crabb.
Yeah, I agree with that. He's probably, I think, the guy that would make the most sense to trade.
I think when Neil Olshey gave him that deal, and I say gave him, it was more about the fact that you couldn't get a guy to come to Portland in free agency and less about who Alan Crabb was. I think Neil Olshey didn't want his draft pick to get away and go off somewhere where he couldn't control the minutes. And I thought he looked at him and went, "That at least it's an asset. It's an $18.5 million contract. And that gives me the ability to go out and trade that contract." I think Alan Crabb is expendable. I think Evan Turner is expendable. I think Myers Leonard, while I love him as a person, I think he's just such a solid person. And I think I'm afraid he's going to end up somewhere like San Antonio or somewhere like Channing Frye ended up, where you end up going, "Man, why couldn't he have done that for us?" I just think the team around Myers Leonard is not the right kind of team for Myers to kind of break out.
I think that Myers, if Myers is involved in a trade, there has to be someone else going as well, because he hasn't had a very good season. So I don't think he has a lot of people looking at him. And the only thing I would say about Evan Turner is it feels like he's started to finally kind of mesh with the team. And they've actually been pretty successful since he came into the starting lineup with the three-guard lineup that they're using now.
He is, they're playing garbage teams too, but he also, his personality's starting to come out a little bit. And I think in Portland, that's all people want. That's what you want. You want Paul Allen to look up from his phone. You want Evan Turner to be like, you know, when they had that Twitter feud with CJ and Evan was kind of the voice of reason. People are getting to know him. He's not so weird anymore.
Yeah, no. I think he's very likable. I think you definitely have to keep Mason Plumlee, too. We haven't talked about him.
He's not making any money. He's making $2 million. It's precious.
Even if he wasn't, I mean, he is just playing. He's having a monster season.
I think dollar for dollar, Mason Plumlee, his value is second on this team as far as value.
Mm-hmm.
Because for the $2.3 million he's making, you're getting a lot. And by the way, the Blazers can make him a qualifying offer. And next season, he would be a restricted free agent if they did that. So they have the ability to re-sign him. But then they're in a situation where they're going to have to match a contract. Somebody's going to offer him money. So would you trade Mason Plumlee knowing that he's got value? But you're probably not going to retain him unless he's not worth what you're going to have to pay him.
That's exactly what I was thinking about Mason Plumlee, is you might not be able to keep him. He's already said that he wants to explore a free agency when he gets the opportunity.
And so he'll be a restricted free agent. You'll make a qualifying offer. And in order to keep him, you're going to have to pay him like you paid Alan Crabb. You're going to have to overpay him and it's not, or Myers Leonard even at $9 million a year, it's not going to be worth what you have to pay him. So why would, you know, would you explore trading him so you can get something back? Or you just love him so much that you want to keep him no matter what?
And this is why I just don't like the idea of when someone's really playing well and you don't know what's going to happen in the next 2 or 3 years, they're going to continue to do really well. And we get rid of all these good players. That's why I resist the notion of getting rid of Dame. I resist the notion of getting rid of CJ. I think in order to have, you know, and again, we're in the Western Conference. Ultimately, we're going up against the Golden State Warriors. And in order to beat that team, you're going to need to have two backcourt guys that can play, drive, distribute the ball, and hit the three. And you can't do that if you get rid of either of those guys.
Speaking of, C.J. McCollum, I think, is the best value on the team right now. $3.2 million for what he gives you. You just can't find that anywhere else in the league. John's in Portland. John, what's up?
Well, hey, thanks for taking my call, John.
You bet.
Wanted to compliment you on your article about Taggart, not letting him off the hook. I think this big stage is new for him. And he's handling it pretty well, but he's had a couple of stumbles, like you said. I think ultimately, you know, the number 16 ranked class, you got to say the man stepped up and really did his job so far. Let's see what, you know, how spring football goes and what kind of a game day coach he is. The second thing is, Kiki, I have to disagree. I think Mr. Canzano said the other day, the structure of the NBA is such, salary-wise and so forth, that small markets like ours just can't keep superstars and even really solid journeymen. That's why I say pack them all up, since we have two first-round picks, and try to get some, you know, some superstar out of college that we can build around.
Yeah, I think, Kiki made the point that you're playing against what was the San Antonio Spurs or maybe the Lakers in the 90s. Now it's become the Warriors, and it was the Thunder until Durant left, and now it's the Warriors. You're playing against those kinds of organizations. I don't think you can clutch your marginal assets like Mason Plumlee, Myers Leonard. I don't think you can emotionally hold on to those guys while trying to chase the ultimate prize. I think you kind of have to decide if we're going for it, we're going to have to make some shrewd decisions that are going to be painful decisions, but man, we move forward. And I think I go back to like the Patriots, like how have they stayed where they are? Because Bill Belichick will cut a guy right after the Super Bowl, give him his ring, you ain't worth the money anymore, you're gone. The 49ers of the Eddie D era, Roger Craig and Ronnie Lott, those guys were like your Clyde Drexler, Bill Walton, Maurice Lucas figure. Like Ronnie Lott was Maurice Lucas, okay, for the Niners. And the organization said, you don't make sense anymore, and just went, goodbye, you're in a Raider uniform. You have to do those things, I think, to win. And it's not the kind of stuff. Fans revolted. They made a poster in the Bay Area that was called Change. It was a lithograph poster, and it was Ronnie Lott and Roger Craig looking in a mirror, and they were wearing their Raider uniforms, but the reflection in the mirror was them in their Niner uniforms, and people went nuts for that drawing. It can't be emotional, because if it is, that's in the way, I think, of progress. But I get it. You're a fan. You shouldn't be a GM if you're a fan. Let's go out to the phones. Mike's in Portland. What's up, Mike?
So, man, I want to talk about Damian Lillard. I don't know why people keep saying they like him when this guy has been constantly rejected by his peers. Don't know quality ball player, superstar, want to come to Oregon and play with him. He's been rejected for the for representing America in the Olympics. He's been rejected from being put in the All-Stars. Why do you guys keep hopping, talking about you like somebody that is constantly rejected by his peers? Talk to you later.
By laying it down. Yesterday, we talked about it. I said I raised the possibility yesterday that he's a good player, not a great player. He's a fringe all-star. There's a lot that goes with it. And when the Blazers don't have him on some nights, C.J. McCollum is alone out there. It kind of makes me wonder if this organization would be better off sort of maximizing what it could get for Damian Lillard. Why do they do it, Mike? Because it's emotional, because they're fans. It's inherent in the word fanatic. You're a fanatic, Kiki. You're a fanatic, Gliss.
True. Guilty.
You go to the games. You root for the team. and you would be a lousy GM because it would be this collection of, it would be Martell Webster, it would be Travis Outlaw still here, and right. you never would have let Nick Batum leave. You would have said, LA's my guy.
But don't you think, okay, let's say, and I am going to defend, yes, I am emotional, but yeah. okay, so we keep Dame and CJ and blow out everybody else. Don't you think that in order to compete in the Western Conference, you have to have two quality guards like that that can fill it up?
I think you need three players who are stars regardless of position.
Right.
So I think the problem they have right now is they have two guys that kind of overlap at that guard position. They have nobody in the front court who really moves the needle. You can play with Mason Plumlee, but I don't think you can win big with Mason Plumlee as your center. He's got to be at the end of the bench, your backup center. They don't have that other superstar tent pole. It's like a tent with the two guys underneath it, and they're kind of holding it up.
Right, but if you get rid of Dame or CJ, and then you get another perennial player, okay, you still have two players, but then...
But at least they're diversified.
But then if you're talking fourth quarter, if you're talking a tight game and it's fourth quarter, and you know everyone in the building knows that Dame's going to go for a three or whatever the case may be, you double-team him, you don't have another option. If CJ's there, that makes it a lot harder to defend. That's my only point.
It is, except they're... I think you need somebody who's different from them. I think that you could, I think you'd be better off with, if you could get, let's just throw this out there. If you could get DeMarcus Cousins for Damian Lillard, and all of a sudden you had a lineup that had Evan Turner and CJ McCollum and DeMarcus Cousins in it, are you better off? I think that team wins more games. I just think that they're different, they're diversified, and I think you're getting one of the best two or three big men in the game. Certainly the best one that's available. 417-7575. Brent Musburger, he hung it up. Brian Mulvison was his spotter at the Rose Bowl for years. He's going to join us next to tell Musburger stories.
Something is about to happen.
BFT.
Now listen up, everyone.
Let's go. The bald-faced truth.
John Canzano.
John Canzano is on the game.
I got to say I love him most of the time. I think he's right on.
He's okay.
John's great.
He's a little unusual.
Live every afternoon, 12 to 3 p.m.
I hate that guy because he just never knows what he's talking about.
I think he does a damn good job.
That's my dude, man. Yeah, I know him, man. I let my mother listen to him.
Now, from the Pac West Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth on 750 The Game.
First Call Heating and Cooling, make them your first call. They've been doing it since 1939. And by it, I mean keeping homes warm in an ice storm ahead, cold weather. First Call Heating and Cooling can make your home warm, energy efficient, save you money in the long term. It's what we've done. This is a great company with great employees. FirstCallHeat.com to see what I'm talking about. They do it all, including servicing your existing system. You know, when you turn on your furnace and your heater and it's burning stuff and you're like, what am I blowing into my home? First Call Heating and Cooling can make sure that your system is running smoothly, regardless of brand, regardless of maker. FirstCallHeat.com, 503-231-3311. That's 231-3311. Brent Musburger, hanging it up after all those years. And it got me thinking, like, you know, I don't know if you watched or you didn't watch or you're into Musburger or not, but he signed off in his final broadcast. And, you know, if you're a Musburger fan, I think you probably walked away going, man, there's a part of my childhood or somebody was in it with me for all those games that walked away. And if you're somebody who is interested in kind of the story behind the story, I think you have to look at Brent Musburger's career and the games that he called. And you have to look and say, okay, well, who was there with him? Well, who's always there with the broadcast guy is it's the play-by-play guy, and it's his spotter. Here's Musburger's final opening call.
You are looking live at Rupp Arena in Lexington, Kentucky. The lights are off. The crowd uneasy. Their beloved Wildcats have lost two games in a row, and never in John Calipari's career at Kentucky has he lost three straight.
There's Musburger setting the stage, and then his final send-off at the end of the broadcast, 77 years old.
What a road we've traveled together. You know, thanks so much to you for sharing your time with me. What great memories we've had over the last almost 50 years. But now it's time for me to turn over the play-by-play duties to those fine young announcers who are growing up at ESPN. Make no mistake about it. I'm going to miss games like this. I'm going to miss working with all the great analysts that I've been with through the years. But maybe you'll pay me a visit out of my new place in Las Vegas. Why not? We can share a cold one and maybe a win or two. Anyway, thank you so very much for all the appreciation and all the great moments that we've experienced together. God bless.
There he is, born in Portland, Oregon, Brent Musburger. Now we go to Brian Mulvison, who is the regional vice president for IMG and was Brent Musburger's spotter. He joins us now. How are you, Brian?
I'm doing great, John. How are you?
I'm well. I want to hear all these stories that you got with Musburger and how that all started. How did you end up spotting a game for him?
You know, I got to know Brent when I was a student at the University of Michigan, just when I was in my early 20s, and worked in media relations and was able to work with Brent, give him a lot of information when he came in, and that was kind of that. I went to go to work for ABC Sports, and Brent continued on with CBS, but before you knew it, right away, Brent ended up leaving CBS and came over to ABC, and I was a familiar face, and we hit it off, and I was doing Monday Night Football at the time, and he was just getting started in his ABC career, and he had an opportunity to bring somebody with him to the booth in the mid-90s and asked me to do it, and I said, gosh, that would be a great seat to watch all those games, and ended up doing 14 straight years with Brent, and we did a lot of great college football games.
What was he like to work with, or was he a prep guy? Did he like to be at the stadium or the arena insanely early, or what was Musburger like?
Oh, yeah, he was, it was interesting. He'd love to get out there early, but he also would do a great job of kind of keeping an eye on everything else that was happening, you know, in college football that day, where I worked with some analysts, like a guy like Dick Vermeil early in the mid-90s was his partner, and you know, there'd be a fantastic Florida State game going on, and Dick wanted no part of it because he thought it would take away his focus from maybe Notre Dame, USC we were doing that night. But Brent always wanted to know what every score was and what was going on in the country. But absolutely, great preparation, and yeah, he's just a consummate professional.
The memories that you have, what games, if we're having a beer and I say, hey, give me a highlight for you, calling a game with Musburger as his spotter, give me an idea of what we start that conversation with.
You know, that's a good question. I would say that the great thing about Brent, he would make every game a big game. Now, naturally, you've got a number one versus number two, or you've got some, big impact on the college football world. That's going to be a bigger game. But Brent, in his love for what he did, would just bring it. And it didn't matter if we were doing Utah, Colorado State, or Air Force at Army, which, we did some of those games too. And he just would bring that excitement, that enthusiasm, just that passion for, he was a guy loving what he did for a living. And you could probably hear that in his broadcast. But if you look back at some of the great ones, I mean, we had plenty of great Rose Bowls. Still one of my favorite was Jake the Snake Plummer in Arizona State, battling to the end with a very good Ohio State team. We did some great Michigan-Notre Dame games. A lot of Ohio State games, thinking back, their national championship year there in the, I guess it would be early 2000s, there was a play at Purdue on a fourth down play where they went for it all, and Brent had a Holy Buckeye call, and we just had some great games. Texas, Oklahoma, I mean, there were so many of them. There was a fantastic kind of ending at Nebraska. Actually, it actually put them into overtime, a game, Nebraska at Missouri. It was at Missouri, and Scott Frost, who we all know here in Oregon, was the quarterback at the time, and, had a ball go off a guy's foot, and, Brent was right on the call, and that was a great memory. But just so many games over the years, and he even joked, as he kind of got relegated to the witness protection plan of the SEC network, he still enjoyed, whether it was Mississippi State or Kentucky or Tennessee or whoever he was doing that day, he brought that enthusiasm and made it a great game.
You tell a story, and I read Andrew Greif's piece that's on Oregon Live, which is fantastic if you're into reading about sort of the history of things, but about, you know, you had Musburger, Notre Dame USC game at the LA Coliseum. Then you have the Nike meeting with Phil Knight's office. What was that like?
Oh, and again, you know, for a guy like me, it was just being in the passenger seat for these great times, these great moments. You know, the Phil meeting in particular, I remember well because, you know, Brent had asked, hey, you think we can go over to Nike's campus? I'd love to say hi to Phil. And I'm like, well, you know, I know Phil a little bit, but I don't know if he's going to take time out of his schedule to meet with you, Brent. You know, let me look into it. And happened to contact Phil, and he was like, absolutely, I love it. Yeah, yeah. I think it was a board meeting or something that day for Nike, too. It happened to be a very busy Thursday before Musburger was in for a game that fall here in Eugene. And but sure enough, you know, Phil made an hour for him, and I think he only made a half hour for him, but it ended up being an hour. And those guys just shared stories about all kinds of college football and coaches and business strategy and everything else. And it was just fascinating to be, you know, to be on the fly on the wall hearing those guys talk. But you know, that was neat about Brent. I mean, if you're 35 to 60, you probably grew up with Brent, whether it was the NFL Today or anything he's done in his career. He's done so much. And people, you know, want to meet him. People want to share stories with him, hear his stories, and people would take time for it. And I run into a lot of people who have maybe had a chance to meet Brent along the way, and they always seemed to think it was pretty positive. They always, you know, enjoyed meeting him. And I just ran into Ricky Williams last week, and he was talking about how Brent happened to have his call when he broke the NCAA rushing record. And, you know, so these guys remember that kind of stuff of who was there, and they probably listened to it 100 times, you know. And Brent kind of had that ability to be at all kinds of things, whether it was the Flutie play or anything else. If you look back in history, Griffey coming around to score against the Yankees in 95 or the Trailblazers winning it. You know, he still tells a story about, I think there were some people upset in Portland because after, you know, the Blazers have this great win, if anybody remembers that day, they bounced off to a golf tournament. And Brent didn't really get to, you know, nowadays they have, you know, a full half-hour post-game or something.
Yep.
But back in the day, CBS had to get somebody, I think it was to Riviera in L.A., or I don't know where the event was, but
the Kemper Open, you know, or something like that, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was the Kemper Open. Good call. And anyway, you know, there's somebody back at CBS headquarters like, you've got to get it to golf, you've got to get it to golf. And who knows what advertisers were involved or why it was so important. But here, you know, the Blazers win it, and Brent has to quickly sign off. And you know, Brent being from Portland originally, and he just kind of was disappointed in the way that one was handled because I think people think that the broadcaster is the one who's like, oh, I'm done, let's get out of here.
Yeah, it's your fault.
Yeah, obviously that's not the way at all.
We're talking to Brian Mulvison, Regional Vice President of IMG. You've lived in Eugene, I think, for the last 7 or so years, six years?
6 years, yeah.
Let's go back to September 1996. It's a Saturday. You're in a broadcast booth in Provo, Utah. You've got BYU and Texas A&M playing. You're 28 years old. Here's Brent Musburger, and you're looking over. Is this the first time you were his spotter?
Yeah, you know, I had an opportunity to, you know, be in the truck for many years doing college football. Did Monday Night Football with Al, Frank, and Dan for 5 years, which, again, great experience. And you grew up watching those guys, and now you're having Monday morning breakfast meetings and talking about the game. And so, I mean, I had some good experience. But when you actually go up there in the booth and Brent's counting on you to have who's making the play, you know, who's caused the fumble, who's making the tackle, who deflected the ball, you know, all that stuff that goes into it. It's a different way to watch a game. I mean, you have to watch that game so intently for 3 to 3.5 hours through a pair of binoculars, and you need to know who's limping off the field and who's warming up for who, and there's a lot that goes into it because you know, these broadcasters rely on you as a second set of eyes. I mean, they've got it pretty well. They've done their homework, but in that moment, they need to know, you know, who's deflected it, who's got the interception, and you've got to be on it. So there's a bit of pressure there. And sure, you know, when I first started, I was a little bit nervous. But as you get into that cadence of game after game, year after year, you know, it's like anything. You work well with somebody and you build a trust, and you're able to do it without much worry.
Brian Mulvison, Regional VP, IMG. Talk about IMG in Oregon. For people who don't understand the relationship at Oregon and other universities, how does that work?
Well, IMG handles the multimedia rights for colleges and universities all over the country. We've got the big ones. We've got Michigan, Texas, Ohio State, you name them. We've got a lot of them. And out here in the West, I started at Oregon, and came up here in 2010 after 11 years at EA Sports, the video game company, and handled the business side of it. So we basically guarantee Oregon a certain amount of revenue every year, and hopefully we do well and bring them more than that. And we do that through the radio rights, you know, right there on your station. Yep. Or and we've done some television. We used to have the Oregon Sports Network, and we still do that at some schools like Gonzaga and some other places that we work with. But obviously the Pac-12 Network has the TV rights now in the Pac-12. And then all the corporate partnerships, whether it's local ones like Les Schwab or Pacific Source Health Plans, or, you know, national partners like Miller Coors and Pepsi and AT&T. Those all go through us, and we bring partnerships to universities to really maximize their brand.
Brian Mulvilson, Brent Musburger, as he's going away. Did you get a chance to talk to him, wish him well?
You know, I had a great opportunity. I actually went down to Lexington. I was just down there night before last. So I was actually at UCLA on Monday, and a few people talked me into, you know, gosh, you should really get back there and see Brent. And so a couple of us went back. My wife wanted to go, so we both ended up. She flew from Eugene. I flew from L.A. We got there Monday night, just a couple hours before tip-off. Surprised Brent. He was surprised. Couldn't believe that we'd make the trip out there. And we just had a wonderful night. We ended up telling stories late into the night over a few beers. And Brent's always good for that. Brent always enjoyed coming to Eugene and tasting some of the local beers here and going out to the restaurants. So, yeah, we had a great time Monday night, had a chance to look back on a lot of great times. And, you know, Brent really isn't retiring. I mean, we won't see him on the airwaves like we've been accustomed. And obviously he kind of wrapped up quite a television career, but he's got another plan, and he's going to be spending some time in Las Vegas, bringing, you know, just basic to those that have that interest.
Brian Mulvilson, I wish you the best. I will see you in an airport, I'm sure. All right, there's Mulvilson talking Musburger. What'd you think about Musburger going away?
Oh, I think it was time. 77. He had a great career, long career. I think sometimes, I think just a couple of the off-color things that he said maybe has tainted him a little bit.
Well, but
he had a great career, you know. But I think it's kind of one of those cases where, you know, maybe he could have gone away a couple years earlier and then those things wouldn't have popped up.
I also think it taints him to me, like the Joe Mixon stuff.
Yeah,
obviously at the end, some of the references that he made over the years, like people are like, okay, is he just getting up there and he's saying things like he doesn't know what he's saying? But then he's going off to be in the gambling industry. Like there's a stigma there.
Yeah, for sure.
Where you're like, hey, if you're in the business of Vegas, then you're in the business of Vegas. But you can't go from the press box where you're supposed to be a journalist.
Right. Blurred lines for sure.
To being all of a sudden like, you know, that's not the press. That's like, could you imagine Keith Jackson going off to, hey, I've got a wagering operation that I'm going to be involved in.
Nelly.
People would go nuts. Bob's in Portland. What's up, Bob?
Well, John, a couple things. You were talking about the Blazers, first of all. So I think all those guys are expendable. And the other thing is, who really wants them at the end of the day? What kind of trade value? But my question to you is going back to Taggart, and I'm going to go a little Trump on you because I think you're being a little, I don't know if the word sanctimonious, about, you know, you guys are right and he's wrong. Everybody's got two sides, so shouldn't we get the players involved? You have them come on the show, then they can tell us what happened, then we can really see what was happening there?
My point is this. I don't really care about that as much as I care. Like, they came out, the university decided they were going to suspend the guy, and they suspended him without pay. They issued an apology. I was done with it. Like, and I don't blame the strength coach. I don't think he should have been fired for this. And in fact, I kind of want him to be my personal trainer because I think he'd be hard on me, and this is good. But I also am looking at it going, okay, three guys end up in the hospital. You got to look at that, right, Bob? I mean, don't you have to look at that?
Well, have you ever been on the side of something, John, maybe in the law where you had to concede, you know, plead no contest or something, you know, you knew you're innocent and you had to, you just couldn't take it all the way, or somebody above you made you do something that you didn't really want to do and you just felt you had to have your, you know, have your say?
I normally have my say, but I think I'm unusual. I'm in this weird thing where they give me the microphone and they say, have your say. That's good for business. But I get what you're saying. I get that people sometimes are in positions where they have to buy a storyline that isn't the real storyline. Dana Altman, I think, falls in that camp as well. But I just think if you're Willie Taggart, yesterday was supposed to be National Signing Day. I would have spent yesterday talking about my recruits and my guys and glossing past the David Reed. I thought he did a really good job. Like when I first asked him about, hey, what happened? How do you address the David Reeves DUI? How do you address the strength and conditioning thing when recruits ask you? I thought his initial answer was perfect, and he should have just moved on.
Absolutely, we did. And we answered him. We didn't hide from any of it, and we were honest. We attacked it the way we needed to, and we were flat out honest with us. And actually, I think it helped us in recruiting because they appreciated us being honest. And most of the kids and parents knew us, knew what we were about.
I think he was in perfect position right there. Let's move on. Let's talk about the real deal, McNeil. Let's talk about, you know, all your defensive players. And again, this is like a 16-minute interview, and probably 2 or 3 minutes of it was spent dealing with this stuff. I just felt like I thought he was fatigued yesterday. I thought it was part of, you know, you're not at your best when you're fatigued, but sometimes you're at your most real when you're fatigued. It's like truth serum, right? You got up at 3 o'clock in the morning. You were waiting for National Signing Day and recruits to fax their letters of intent and all that stuff. And then reporter 12 hours later, 15 hours later is asking you a question that and you finally just say, you know what? That was bogus. And it all comes out. I get all that. I don't have to like it, but I get it. And here's my thing with Taggart. I like Willie Taggart. I wish him well. I hope he does well. I hope he wins a bunch of games. I also hope he learns from this. And maybe the biggest takeaway for Willie Taggart is I'm not in South Florida anymore. I'm not the fifth best thing going on in the state anymore. I'm not at Western Kentucky. I'm at the University of Oregon. And man, when we sneeze, it's a story. Leave it here. Punch It Audio next.
The Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 and 102.9 The Game.
I feel good knowing that my family's safe. We drive a Ford Explorer. That's a safe car. Anna likes it. She wasn't an SUV person. It's not a huge SUV, but she loves it because she feels safe in it. And yet it's a manageable car size-wise. She loves a Ford vehicle. We've driven several Ford vehicles from Gresham Ford. But what I'm saying is if you are in the market for a new or used vehicle, start that search at Gresham Ford. You can find them online at GreshamFord.com. You can look at the new Ford vehicles there. But get yourself out. Get a test drive. Meet Bess Wills and the team at Gresham Ford. They are at 1999 Powell Boulevard in Gresham as you pull into Gresham. And that's a great company. And I talk about Bess all the time, and people are like, well, you say she's got a good handshake. And what I mean by that is she's going to give you a deal. And I think you could tell a lot about somebody by their handshake. I do. She's going to give you a deal that you're going to turn around and be like, you know what? That was a fair transaction. Because I think your fear when you're buying a car is that somebody's going to get over on you. And Bess, it's not that kind of dealership. She's not looking to cut your throat. She's just trying to sell a vehicle, a good vehicle, and get a fair price for it. So if you are in the market, go see Bess before you do anything else. And if you want to shop around, do that. But start it at Gresham Ford. I was at a volleyball game over the weekend, and a kid came up and shook my hand. And I turned to her parents, and I said, your kid's got a good handshake. Looked me in the eye, shook my hand. Wasn't a fish, like that cold fish handshake that Joey Chestnut gave me once upon a time. I knew Joey Chestnut was no real champion. When he shook my hand.
Yeah, I don't like the dead fish.
He did a dead fish handshake. I would understand if he was a surgeon or something.
Yeah.
You know, like, hey, I'm protecting my hands. But he's a competitive eater.
Yeah.
I
worked with a girl that literally would break your hand. I was like, seriously, what? And I said to her one time, I was like, stop. Like,
what's
what are
your
you
problem?
Doing?
Overcompensating.
Jeez. I didn't like
what was did she have a good job? Was she smart? Was she funny? Was she good at her job? Or
yeah,
what?
She was okay.
She's okay.
She no, she wasn't the best, honestly.
She's an arm wrestler. Do you think she was overcompensating with the handshake?
I think so. Let me put it to you this way. She was working at an ABC affiliate and Peter Jennings died. And she came in and couldn't figure out why people were freaking out. And we're like, Peter Jennings died. And she's like, who's Peter Jennings?
Yeah.
So
good handshake.
You can pick your own.
She had a good handshake. Let's go out to Preston in Beaverton. What's up, Preston?
Hey, thanks, John. I forgot all about Brent Musburger leaving, and I was like, man, let's see him. You know, Chris Berman's leaving, kind of stepping away. Yeah. And then, of course, you have Vin Scully. You had the man, Vern Lundquist, and Dick Enberg, excuse me. Now, I just turned 50 like 3 months ago. My birthday is like 2 weeks after the 14-year-old. And it's just, yeah, they're all leaving. They're all these great announcers. You know, I'm old school like that. I'll listen to all the older guys who have been around 30, 40, 50 years. Makes you wonder who the next breed of guys are going to be. The only one that's left, really, is the Do You Believe in Miracles, Al Michaels. He's the only one that's left, and he's 70. So it's like, I wish the new breed good luck, but thanks to the ones who paved the way, you know, all the guys that I just mentioned, they had their own key catchphrases and what have you. But I don't know, man. It's just, like I said, I'm old school.
I don't know.
Lucky, I'm lucky enough to know that we got Jerry Allen, we got Mike Parker, we got Brian Wheeler. They're all great. But I just say, hey, good luck to the next breed.
Yeah, I also don't think that the new age broadcaster. See, what did Bill Shonley, Vin Scully, Brian Musburger, what did those guys have in common? Well, it was the era that they broadcasted in was this. It was transitioning. They saw the transition from radio to television being the primary focus. So a lot of them came up in radio where they had to describe the scene without you ever seeing it. And Shonley in particular was just phenomenal at describing a scene. You know, it was the kind of thing where you could listen to the broadcaster and then watch the clip later. And it was exactly as they described it. Like Bill Shonley describing that fight between Maurice Lucas and Daryl Dawkins is, to me, like some of the best play-by-play is just when a guy has an unexpected moment that doesn't make sense in any other, you know, realm. Here's suddenly a basketball game and a hockey game breaks out.
Into Gilliam, put it up, doesn't drop. Dawkins the rebound.
There it is. I mean, you see the scene, right? So they had that in common. I think they came up at a time when they were really describing, telling, not just showing you, but telling you. And then Musburger goes on television and Keith Jackson goes on television and Vince Scully goes from radio to television. And suddenly they had the aid and the benefit of having the picture to go with the broadcast. All right. So it's not like TV was invented. It just became more widely disseminated while these guys were in the profession. Then I think the other thing that was going on is they were the only show, whether it was radio or television, they generally didn't have the competition of you seeing the game, what, as an instant classic, later as a replay, on SportsCenter, on FS1, on ESPN's variety of shows, on your local news. So you only saw it generally one time, and then later in the career, in the last 20 years, is where you start to see it's more widely disseminated. You're getting it everywhere, and you're getting it multiple times. So I think the young broadcaster who's coming up today has an inherent challenge with Twitter, Instagram, all of those video clips that are widely disseminated, the internet, of course, in full steam until Donald Trump stops it. And you've got ESPN, SportsCenter, FS1, all the shows that are on all over the place. And I don't know that guy has it easier because I think you're seeing it in a multitude of ways. Quickly, he's not the only show. It's like, you know, if I'm Brent Musburger or Keith Jackson or Chris Berman, I'm looking around going, let all these young guys figure out how do you call the game when people are watching it on their phones, people are doing it differently. I just think that there's some challenge. And I'd love to get John Strong, the voice of American soccer, on this, because I think he is in the boat where he is trying to, you know, he's plugging along in mid-career where his career's taken off and he's the voice of American soccer. But he's at a time in which all of this extra stuff is going on, and how does that change you as a broadcaster? I would like to know, because Vin Scully and those guys, they did it, but I don't know if you told Vin Scully, do you want to come up in today's era, if he could be Vin Scully? Like, could Harry Caray be Harry Caray in today's media?
I don't think so. I think there are so many avenues to get information now, and our audiences are so fragmented that you have to do one thing and do it well. And I think the old school guys, that's all they knew. And so now coming up, it would be interesting to have Strong on and see what his thoughts are on that.
Get him on the show. All right, let's play.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth headquarters.
Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio.
Well, the Super Bowl's right in front of us. Bill Belichick says the Atlanta Falcons, they're a tough challenge. Punch it.
They're consistent. They move the ball and hang up a lot of points every week. So, you know, obviously the biggest challenge of the year, the best offensive team that we faced. And that's, well, we'll have our hands full. We know that.
Belichick's a witch. And I know a lot of people are predicting a blowout game. I don't think so. I think this one comes down to one possession into the game and somebody scores. And now we're wondering, is there going to be an onside kick? I think it's going to be that kind of close game. I also expect a lot of points. I know people are looking at Belichick saying, hey, the last time he faced a number one offense at a Super Bowl was a 19 points he gave up. I just don't see the Atlanta Falcons being held down, and I think the Patriots' offense is better than advertised. Roger Goodell, he was asked whether gambling can coexist with the NFL. Punch it.
It does. It's happening today. It's sponsored by governments. It exists throughout our world. What we have always said is we need to make sure that there's a fine line between team sports gambling and the NFL. We want to protect the integrity of our game, and that's the line we will always do.
Yeah, protect the integrity of the game while also promoting fantasy football. He left that part out. The NFL has a problem in that it's in bed with the fantasy football online wagering sites, and then, you know, they're talking about moving a team to Vegas, and you can't speak out against gambling while simultaneously gambling and moving to Vegas. Goodell talked about the Vegas operation.
We haven't made a determination about Las Vegas as an NFL market. That's part of the relocation process. The Raiders submitted an application. It's one that we're considering carefully, but there's a great deal more work to be done, and there are several elements of that.
Is there a line in Vegas over whether the Raiders will end up in Vegas? That's what I would be wondering. And the ultimate irony, what are the odds of this team getting to Vegas? You had, you know, Sin City as a destination. You got Sheldon Adelson, who has moved, he pulled his pledge out. And you've got, you know, they were talking about a $1.9 billion stadium. And apparently Mark Davis learned from Dad, tried to pull a fast one by negotiating stadium terms without Adelson being involved in it. So he pulled his money out and said, I'm a casino. And by the way, that's a casino owner who was going to have a stake in the stadium. Goodell said he doesn't see an ownership position in a team from a casino. It's not consistent with the policies of the NFL. Fantasy football is a different thing, though. Lady Gaga, she's got the national anthem, or she has the halftime show. What is she singing?
I think she's halftime.
She talked about her mother's advice heading to the Super Bowl. Punch it.
She told me just to stick with my skill set and my commitment to what I do and to not waver from it and to stay confident in what I truly am. And I think that she's, you know, right. Because, you know, the riskiest thing you can bet on is yourself.
risky, but yeah, but you have to go, you have to do it your way. I think that's what she's saying. Be who you are and do it your way. There's also this great parallel in entertainment between sports and music, and she talked in particular about the confidence that it takes in both.
I think that confident when you're playing a game or playing a show,
right.
I think that that's the best type of confident. Because if you're too loud, your opponent can hear you. You know, so I like to keep a really strong focus, whether I'm doing an interview or I'm getting ready to do a dress rehearsal for the show. I just like to be sure of what it is that I have to accomplish.
Stephanie Germanotta is her real name. That's Lady Gaga. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Steph.
Interesting.
30 years old, went to NYU, net worth about $275 million. She gets the halftime show.
Wow. You know, we were talking about this earlier in the show, Gliss and I and Dustin. I think there are about five performers right now that I kind of feel like they should just rotate those five, like Justin Timberlake, Beyonce, Katy Perry, Bruno Mars, I think would be good. And just like
for Super Bowl,
they just rotate them through.
How about Taylor Swift?
Yeah, sure.
Rihanna, Jay-Z, Eminem, Elton John. Is Elton John too old?
No, he's boring. He's boring. Look, I've seen him in concert twice and I expect something. It's like I should have just gone home and played his album. He comes out. He came to Portland, comes out. He goes, "Hello, Portland." And then he just sat there and played and then got up and walked off stage.
Goodbye, Portland.
Yeah. It's like, okay. All right,
give me a thumbs up or thumbs down. Should this person play the Super Bowl? Kanye West.
No.
You're selling it. Not buying it.
I am absolutely. I am selling it as fast
why?
As possible.
Why no Kanye?
Because he's just a strange dude. And you know, he's probably going to go off on some tangent.
Not
thank
in.
You, Kramer. No.
How about Adele?
You know, they asked her. And she said no, because she's like, that's just not my thing. I'm not a performer.
How about Adele, though? Would you take Adele as a halftime show?
I would.
Kind of slow.
For one song.
Kind of slow.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
I think she would do one song and then have other people kind of doing their thing.
I think it would be like Elton John. Like, I think it would be boring.
That's why. Well, no.
I'm not saying she's not great.
No,
she's
phenomenal. No.
I'd love to see her. If she
no,
was in
and
the studio.
That's exactly what she said. She said, I don't. That's not my. I would be, and she said, I would be terrible at
pipes.
That.
She has pipes.
Oh my gosh, she could, yeah.
But if you put her in a stadium of 70,000 football fans, people are going to get up and use the restroom.
No. I think if she did it for one song, listen, and she had this orchestra behind and she's just belting something out, it would be essentially the equivalent of the national anthem.
Yeah.
She could hold
someone. Let her do the national anthem.
Yeah, let her do
she's
the national
not,
anthem.
I don't think she's halftime show material.
I think she's one song halftime. Like, they didn't they do a mashup not
but
too long ago?
That's not halftime
different
show.
People?
If you have one song, eh.
You could have other people out there.
I'm just,
she should do the national
I'm
anthem.
I'm keeping it real. She's a Star-Spangled Banner or America.
Yep.
God Bless America.
Yeah, she's not jumping
not.
Around, costume change, dancers. That's not her jam.
Bliss, weigh in on this.
Yeah, I don't think she's a halftime show material.
No.
I love Adele. Like, I've seen her live as well.
I
she's fantastic.
We have to say that,
but
I think he's gonna get mad.
But yeah, not halftime show material.
How about Drake?
I don't know. Mm. I mean, I guess it depends. It seems like now they try to have some collaboration when they have the halftime show.
Here's Drake. I need a one dance, got a Hennessy in my hand. One more time before I go. I have powers taking a hold on. I think Drake could pull it off, and
I think
the genre is right. The audience would love him.
Kiki was into that.
Yeah. Kellen is who would Kellen? Kellen's not a Super Bowl guy. Do you like Super Bowl?
Yeah, of course.
Do you? Okay.
Yeah. I was born here.
I didn't know. You just seemed disinterested in when I was looking at you with the music. Because is it because it's like
you
not
know
your
Drake
kind
was
of
on?
Music?
I know who you would like. This, not, I'm just having fun here because I know you won't like this.
Yeah.
This is a home run.
Okay. What do you mean?
Hey, yeah. Justin Bieber. You don't want me to move,
but you tell me to go. His eyes are big.
I don't know why I get Bieber.
Bieber, because you're the anti-Bieber.
Yeah, yeah, no one wants true. Bieber.
I will
Bieber
say
Bieber could be the halftime show. People would eat that up. It'd be controversial. You'd watch it, because you don't know he's going
to
do something.
Well, everyone watches it. I mean, it lasts so long. You can only go to the bathroom for so long. You know what I mean?
That Metallica did just put out a new album.
Did they?
So they are relevant again.
Okay, well, see, there you go.
Do you want Metallica at the halftime show, though?
What about a mashup of Metallica and Adele?
Ooh. Well, that's interesting.
I'll never forget when Billy Joel did... They had Billy Joel do the national anthem at the Super Bowl. I can't remember if the Rolling Stones or Janet Jackson had the halftime part of that. No, Prince had halftime.
Okay.
Prince had halftime, and Billy Joel had the national anthem, and he said the Star Spangled Banner is not a great song. He said mm-hmm. that in the news conference, and people freaked out.
Yeah.
Because he said you kind of have to slog through it. It's
hard to sing.
It's not a beautiful melody.
Okay, I'm going to tease. I was going to actually tease this in Kiki Reads the News, but I'm jumping ahead because it's relevant to what we're saying. I would love for you to tweet me who you think has done the best national anthem. I'm going to tell you my two top favorites of all time. It's got to be Whitney Houston. And then the NBA All-Star game, I believe it was back in 83, was Marvin Gaye.
Yes, that is the best.
Marvin Gaye is the best.
I actually just played that for Dustin the other day before the show.
Had he ever heard it?
No, he was into it. It's the best, I think.
Can you pull it up so that the people who haven't heard it can hear it instead of just keeping an inside joke between you and Dustin and Kiki?
But if someone else has a version that they think is great, tweet it at me because the national anthem, being able to execute the national anthem before such a big game, I think it's really important. Yeah. It sets the tone.
Here's an example of good national anthem. Bad national anthem.
Oh, say can you see by dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed?
You like that one? You buying that one?
Well, I mean, it's not terrible.
Pretty standard.
Yeah, pretty.
How about this
vanilla
one? How about that one? That one has 6 million plus views on YouTube.
Yeah, that was good. Well,
the Cactus Cuties.
Okay. I assume we have Marvin ready.
Yeah, go ahead.
You see, by the dawn's early light, what so proud. The twilight's last gleam, whose broad stripes and bright stars.
He turned it into a song. A real song.
Exactly.
Yeah, he did it.
He actually makes it sound good.
Yeah. It is phenomenal. And then Whitney Houston is a close second.
We got to go to Vegas next. Jay Cornegay is the VP at the Westgate Sportsbook in Vegas. He's going to tell us what's the action like at the Superbook for the Super Bowl. He's next.
I want you all to listen up. This is important stuff, all right?
John Canzano is on Sports Radio 750, The Game.
Okay. Here we go.
The bald-faced truth.
Call 503-417-7575 or 877-733-0750 or text to 64636.
Here we go in 3, 2.
Now, from the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth on 750 The Game.
They're consistent. They move the ball and hang up a lot of points every week. So, you know, obviously the biggest challenge of the year, the best offensive team that we faced. And that's, well, we'll have our hands full. We know that.
I've got my routine. I like to sleep. So, I mean, there might be somebody else in the building before me. But, you know, I'm there pretty late. Usually one of the last ones out of there. And so, you know, feel good about my routine, feel good about where I'm at, and feel like I know how to get myself prepared and ready to play.
That's Matt Ryan, and you heard Bill Belichick before him. Matt Ryan talking about his preparation. Kind of a very quiet MVP-like seasons for him. How has the betting action been on the Super Bowl? We talked to Jay Cornegay with the Westgate Las Vegas Superbook last week. We wanted to bring him back just for a quick hitter on what's been happening at the Sportsbook in Vegas, and he joins us now. Jay, how are you?
Hey, John.
What's it been like in there?
Well, it's been very peaceful. It's the calm before the storm. It's starting to heat up now as we're looking at Thursday. A lot of our guests are coming in, some of the lucky ones that have a four-day weekend. Most of them have 3 days, but we anticipate it to really pick up starting tomorrow night.
You mentioned the proposition wagering, and is it more or less likely that those prop bets come in late, early? Is it a mixed bag?
It's a mixed bag. I mean, once the public gets a hold of it, which will again start tomorrow night, it will have a line. We usually have a teller line, which is one line for multiple windows, and sometimes we have, depending on the business levels, we'll have 3, maybe 12, maybe 16 windows. When it comes down to it, let's see. I think the peak of the betting action will come in about 3 to 4 hours prior to kickoff. And we'll have obviously all hands on deck at that time, but we'll have a few hundred people in line, which will wrap around the book all the way, and sometimes it makes it back towards the casino. But once you get in it moves fairly quickly and gives everybody time to finalize their wagers.
Jay Cornegay is our guest, Westgate Sportsbook Director. You were working at the Imperial Palace in 1995. Steelers are in the Super Bowl. You had Cordell Stewart as a rookie. That prop bet that you guys had in the reaction in the sports book, can you take us back through the story?
Well, there was two different propositions that, you know, it was one of the first years that we put up over under the number of players to have a passing attempt, and it was over 2.5. So, in other words, you're betting it to see if anybody else would have a passing attempt outside the two quarterbacks. And then we had slash Cordell Stewart, who was just having a terrific year, and we had a proposition up: would he have a rushing attempt, a catch a pass, and have a passing attempt? And both of those props got lopsided action, which isn't something that we normally like to see here in Las Vegas. We like to see balanced action, but both of those props got just a tremendous amount of action, where everybody was betting over 2.5, which you usually get about 2 to 1, just around there. So it really adds up. Liability can accumulate very quickly. And then Cordell's prop that he wouldn't accomplish all three was actually the favorite at -250. But there was so much action that he would do all three of those things, it closed at -$3. And, of course, he got back there, and I think he had a rushing attempt really early. And the big question mark was, we thought he was, because he was a receiver, he was going to have a reception. But the only thing that was really in doubt was he going to throw a pass? And they put him back in shotgun. I mean, the whole room erupted. I mean, just seeing him back there taking the snap, and we're like, oh, here it goes. And he got some pressure on him. He rolled out to his right, cocked his arm, and everybody was just saying, throw it, throw it, throw it. And, you know, they didn't care if it was a complete, you know, or a touchdown or interception. They just wanted him to throw that ball. And he tucked it in and ran. And we were just, like, looking at each other, just going, oh, my gosh. But that scenario there, John, it happens being in Las Vegas for the Super Bowl, because there's so many different propositions. A lot of them bet the same way. We get that. We get those little chuckles during the course of the game and the crowd. It might be a meaningless play to some, but in Vegas, it has a different meaning. And so we do experience those times and those different scenarios like that throughout the entire game.
Jay Cornegay is our guest, Westgate Las Vegas Superbook. You know, I've been in the Westgate. I had lunch there last year.
Oh, nice, nice. Do you remember where you ate?
Nice place. I don't know. I walked in, and my wife has an uncle who also works like you in management there. I didn't figure out. After the show the other day, she said, hey, you had the Westgate guy on. You know, my uncle works there. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. We were there. But that's a nice place. I'll have to stop by the sportsbook next time I'm there.
Yeah, you know what? Since Westgate took over the property about 2 years ago, they've really improved. In fact, you know, we put $13 million plus just in the sports book alone, but we've renovated all our rooms in our spa. We have a new spa, we have a new convention area, all the restaurants, and of course they're, you know, they're completing all the rooms. So it's gone through a transformation, all for the positive, because it was really, well, to be honest with you, it was a, you know, a property that was a little sleepy according to Las Vegas standards, but Westgate has turned that around.
You can jump right on, I think we were at the MGM, we jumped right on the train and we just took it right down to the Westgate. So the Brent Musburger leaving ESPN to get into the betting network business, help us make sense of that. What's he going to be doing, and is that good for Vegas when you get guys like Musburger who are into that?
I believe so. I think it's good for us. Anytime that we have a big name that is into the gaming business, it somewhat justifies it, because, you know, a lot of people still in this country just are not very well versed on it, and it's kind of been a taboo over the years, and it's always this dark cloud that surrounds it because it's illegal in almost every single state except for Nevada. In Nevada, it's a highly regulated environment. So, you know, we've actually had senators that came out here when Senator McCain was trying to ban college betting here. But when they came out here and we walked them through the sports books and told them exactly what we have to do as far as recordable transactions and all the precautions that we take, they had a different understanding than they did when they first came into Las Vegas. So with Brent coming in, I think it legitimizes it a bit, just like we see the more discussions about the betting line and everything like that. I mean, it's fine as long as it's regulated and policed like it is here in Nevada. So I look at what they're doing and making a 24-hour, soon to be a 24-hour sports gaming network. I think it's going to go over very well.
Jay Cornegay is with us, Westgate Las Vegas Superbook. The game opened -3, Patriots -3. I keep hearing about all the money flooding on the Patriots. Why is this line not moved to 4.5, 5 when you see 60% of the money on the Patriots?
Yeah, that's because some of the bigger money that we are seeing on the Falcons is well-respected money. Now, the average Joes out there are coming in and betting the Patriots, you know, 2 out of 3 times. But the bigger wagers that we have seen have come in on Atlanta, and which is a little surprising to me, but that's what's holding that number at 3. Now, we'll see what happens over the next 2.5 days or so once the public gets a hold of this thing. We do anticipate them to bet the Patriots. I think it's going to take quite a bit of money for the books to move off this. But I'll tell you, 3, as people in the gaming world know, 3 is a huge number in the betting world, especially in the NFL. But it has been devalued a little bit, mainly because this is going to be a very high-scoring game, so it's less likely to land 3 in all the missed extra points that we're seeing these days. So it's not as important, but it's still there. But I don't think we're going to see it move. I think you'll see, if anything, maybe the Patriots -20, at the most $1.30. That's my guess. But I think the big money is going to hold it down.
This fun for you this time of year, or do you like, I guess, March Madness, this? What else is big in your world?
Well, those are two big ones. I mean, March Madness is crazy. We write a lot more tickets during the first 4 days of March Madness than we do the Super Bowl. Super Bowl is a little easier to manage because it's bigger money, and you know, you have couples, you have ladies that come in, and they're just a different demographic. You know, you have guys that have been making some really big plays. March Madness, it just feels like, John, every bet is $20, okay? And so it's basically Coronas and double bacon cheeseburgers during March Madness. And, you know, these guys come in, and it's a mancation. You got groups of guys, or 2 to 6 guys that they come in, and they just rip it up. And they're a tougher group to handle. I mean, I enjoy both events, but I tell you, I'd rather work 2 Super Bowls than March Madness, because it's certainly hard to control. But other, you know, big weekends, Breeders' Cup weekend, the opening weekend of the NFL is gigantic, and of course, the Derby weekend is big as well.
All right, Jay, I'll let you get back to work. I will say hi when I'm in the sports book. We wish you the best.
Thanks, John.
All right, Jay Cornegay, VP, prop bets in the Super Bowl. Would you bet, yes or no, that the line Houston, we've got a problem, is going to be uttered by the broadcasters in the Super Bowl. Yes or no? Where's your bet?
Yes.
How about Donald Trump? Over or under three mentions of Donald Trump in the Super Bowl?
I'm going to say, well, does that include
broadcasters, anybody on air?
Anyone on air? I don't know. I think they might stay away from it. I'm going to say under.
Who will Donald Trump pick to win the game? Patriots or Falcons?
Patriots. He's having a bromance with Tom, isn't he?
He's buddies with Brady.
Uh-huh.
How many times will Gronk or Gronkowski be said on television during the broadcast?
Ooh.
The over-under is three.
Ooh, I say over. Because I could see them saying Gronk and just twice in one sentence.
Right now, you can get a wager on what color Lady Gaga's hair will be when she comes on stage for the halftime show. If you pick blonde, you get 1-4 odds. Any other color is 5-2.
Interesting.
Here's another one. How many times will J.J. Watt be mentioned during the broadcast? Under or over one time?
Over.
I think that's a safe over.
Uh-huh. Bless you.
Excuse me, sneezing. How many times will Giselle be shown on TV during the broadcast? Under or over 1.5? Gliss?
Over, for sure.
Heads or tails? What are you betting, Gliss?
I'll go heads.
Oh, well, then I'll go tails.
Take tails.
Tails never fails.
That's right. Will either team make a field goal in the first quarter? Yes. Or no? You bet
yes. Yes.
Will either team score three straight times? Yes or no?
Yes.
I say no.
Will Malcolm Butler intercept a pass? You can get that
really
as a prop bet. Would you bet against Malcolm Butler?
Oh, I wouldn't.
He's going to pick a ball. Bet that one at your own risk.
Does it mention length? What's the over-under on the length of the national anthem?
I don't have that.
150 or something like that. Under 2 minutes, maybe something like that.
I don't have that. I have 51 things I'm going through.
Okay.
And if I get to that, I will.
Okay.
First touchdown scored by, who would you bet on scoring the first touchdown?
Atlanta.
Which player?
I'm going to say Devontae Freeman.
I'm taking LeGarrette Blount. I think Patriots score first touchdown.
Really?
I think it's a running touchdown.
Okay.
Over or under 310 passing yards for Tom Brady?
Under.
I say over.
Over or under 57 rushing yards for LeGarrette Blount?
Over.
Oh, they have to be over. They have no Gronk.
Will there be a two-point conversion in the game? Yes or no?
Nah.
I think so. Here's another one. You can get the Patriots' total points scored or Russell Westbrook total points scored. I would not bet against Russell.
Oh, yeah. No, I wouldn't take that at all. Stay away from that.
Who will have more? Phil Mickelson's fourth round score or Patriots' rushing yards?
Patriots' yards.
Higher number. That's interesting. Tiger Woods' fourth round birdies, what will be higher? Tiger's birdies or Patriots Falcons field goals made?
Oh, field goals for sure.
And your Super Bowl MVP is?
Julio Jones.
I'm picking Matt Ryan. I think Atlanta's going to win today. That's my bet today, Atlanta. And then who does the Super Bowl MVP mention first? Does he mention God, his team, his coach, his family, his owner, Donald Trump, or none of the above?
I want to say none of the above. I think they're going to do something kind of broad, like, I got to thank all the guys, something like that. Is that none of the above?
They should mention God first, but I bet they mention their teammates first. That's what I would say.
Yeah.
Matt Ryan, odds to win the Super Bowl MVP and regular season MVP. Yes, you get him 3-1. No, you get him 1-5. Would you take it? If the Patriots win, will Belichick, Brady, or Kraft shake Roger Goodell's hand on TV?
Yeah, they kind of have to.
They have to.
I want to know the over-under on how many drinks Robert Kraft's going to have. I know we don't know that, but it should maybe be visible if he does a repeat of
over and
a couple
under
weeks ago.
0.12 for Robert Kraft's
yeah,
blood
that's
alcohol
true.
Level.
Is his BAC legal? We could just do it that way.
All right. Tweet at me, at John Canzano BFT. As I read those, tell me what you thought was the no-brainer, can't-miss wager of them all. Now, for no-brainer. Speaking of no-brainer, by the way.
Yes.
I mentioned my Valentine's Day reservation was at Swank and Swine downtown here. And I told you guys out there, get a reservation at Swank if you can grab one on Open Table or by calling Swank. You have them covered in the flower department.
I do. My friends at Kern Park, and you've heard me telling you about them for a couple of weeks now.
What do people have to do?
Well, they just need to give them a call. You can give them a call at 503-771-9000. And look, here's the deal. I've been telling you about them for the last couple of weeks because they do a fantastic job.
Yeah.
They sent a beautiful bouquet to Gowie. They surprised me last week with a beautiful bouquet. I know you've used them.
And they're going to do the centerpiece at our Super Bowl
party.
Gorgeous centerpiece.
And here's the thing. You're supporting a local company. I know right now you have a lot of choices in terms of buying flowers. You can get them from an 800 place. But I'm telling you that the great thing about Kern Park is they're a huge supporter of the BFT, this radio show.
Yep.
But then also the Baldfaced Truth Foundation. That's huge.
They're big. They've every time we've done something, like the Super Bowl party, I didn't reach out to them. They heard me talking about it on air, and they said, hey, can we do a centerpiece for it? Can we do something?
Perfect.
And that's the kind of company they are. But so if I have dinner covered and you have the flowers covered.
Right.
And what's the offer with the flowers? Like,
yeah.
What's the deal? What do we get if we order with Kern Park Flower
Shop?
You're
getting all sorts of things. They have a ton of combos that you can put together. Right now, they have a specific special that includes a four-piece box of Moonstruck chocolates. And that's if you spend more than $50. You can have it delivered in the Portland metro area, plus delivery charges.
Mm-hmm.
But you get an awesome Moonstruck chocolates with that. The other thing about them is, you know, they've been doing this for so long. It spans actually five generations. I made a mistake, a couple days ago. I said four. And I was talking with Holly, and I said, I'm so sorry. It's five generations over 100 years. They've got a brick-and-mortar store at 6713 Southeast Holgate. So if you want to pop in and check them out yourself, you certainly can. You can check them out online. That's easy. KernParkPortlandFlowers.com. And I just love the notion of supporting a local family that's been working really hard here in the Northwest. You know you're going to get a beautiful bouquet. And, you know, don't just take my word for it. They were actually voted in 2016, Expertise voted them best floral designers in all of Portland. So, you know, they do great work and they're easy to get a hold of. If you're going to send flowers this Valentine's Day, call our friends Holly and Kim at Kern Park Flower Shop.
All right, do that. Also, make your reservation at Swank and Swine. And so get the flowers with Kern Park, PortlandFlowers.com. And then I went on Open Table.
Okay.
But you can do it, you know, Swank and Swine, you can do it directly. You can go to SwankandSwine.com to see what I'm talking about. But I asked Mark over at Swank and Swine if people could, because Swank restaurant's on one side and then Swine, the whiskey bar,
okay,
is on the other side.
Okay.
But everything at Swank is like fresh and local and handcrafted. Breakfast, lunch, dinner, happy hour, all that. But I'm going Valentine's Day because I went by there and I was like, man, this is like the perfect spot and I've been looking for this. So, and they're going to do their regular menu. They're
okay.
Not doing some like, we're going to charge you over the top for Valentine's Day menu. But they just have their regular dinner menu. They're doing dinner from 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. So for Valentine's Day, you can make the reservation on their website, swankandswine.com. You can buy your flowers at Kern Park Flower Shop.
Yeah,
you got it.
You know, and the other thing I love about getting flowers, and I mentioned this earlier on the show, we get so fragmented. There's things going on here and there. I walked in the station earlier or last week, and there was a bouquet there, totally surprised me. And like the first 7 seconds, you're like, oh my gosh, what did I, you know, you just feel really special.
What did I do right?
I know, I did something right.
You walk around feeling like you've done everything wrong.
Yeah, and so I really encourage you to call them. They do a great job, Kim and Holly. Yeah.
All right, let it go, KernParkPortlandFlowers.com.
Yep.
All right, leave it here. Kiki reads the news next.
Yo, I'm Mary Spears, and you're listening to The Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game. And you know, I got more hair than that dude, too.
The Falcons have done something more than any team in NFL history. What is that thing that they've done more than any team in NFL history? Tweet at me at John Canzano BFT. I will give you the answer to that and something that will make you smarter at your Super Bowl party here coming up in a few minutes. This week and this weekend, if you're looking for a new vehicle or you just want to test drive some of the great Ford vehicles that are out there, Ford's making a great car. Go to Gresham Ford at 1999 Powell Boulevard in Gresham. It's what we've done in our house. We literally bought two Ford Explorers from Gresham Ford. Like, you hear a lot of honks who will be like, go to this place or go to that place. That's where we go. That's literally where we go. And I never forget, my sister, we bought her a Ford Explorer from Gresham Ford, and we wanted to do it as a surprise. And my sister's got a big heart. She'd do anything for anybody. She'd give you the shirt off her back. And I am so lucky to have her as a sister. And we wanted to do this nice thing. So we bought her a Ford Explorer. We're going to surprise her with it. And when I was telling Bess about it at the dealership at Gresham Ford, Bess starts crying. Like, can you imagine, like, that's the car dealership. She's got tears in her eyes. And she's like, that is the coolest thing ever. And your sister. And that's just the kind of dealership it is. Go to GreshamFord.com and go to Gresham Ford literally when you're looking for a car. Kiki's going to read the news.
Ladies and gentlemen,
stand by for news.
This is Kiki Reads the News on the Bald-Faced Truth. Brought to you by Kern Park Flower Shop. Be the hero this Valentine's Day and let Kern Park Flower Shop deliver high-quality flowers to your loved one. Call them today at 503-771-9000.
So a seventh grade girl in New Jersey and her sister were expelled from their school after the girl's parents filed a lawsuit because she loves to play basketball, and they got rid of the girl's basketball team, so she wanted to play on the boys' team. They said no, so the parents sued the school, and then the school turned around and expelled the two girls. So I didn't think that was very cool. The NWA, New York Liberty.
WNBA.
I can't even say it. I'm dyslexic today.
You okay?
Barely.
You have a stroke?
Well, I just ate that sandwich in like 5 seconds.
You
saw
a sandwich.
That.
So you eat a sandwich. And
I think I'm getting like turkey brain freeze or something.
Okay.
But the women's basketball team invited the girl to come watch a practice. And in fact, that's when she found out that she was expelled. So I think that's pretty poor form.
Mm-hmm.
I suspect that this will not be the last that we hear of this lawsuit. But
so they're getting sued by the girl and her family, and
okay. And so then they turn. I think can you even do that? But you know, that's happened before. You know, I know here locally, my friend's son wanted to play volleyball.
Yeah,
and he wasn't allowed to because he was a boy.
Yeah,
and the ironic part about that was he's about half the size of the girls. The girls were all like way bigger than him, and he wasn't allowed to play.
I think all the schools should have boys and girls sports. It really confuses me with the amount of tax dollars that we pay, and I see the funding that goes into sports. There's enough money there. There's enough interest there. Let the kids play.
Yeah. I just felt bad for her. I do know. I think, like, if you say that you go to St. Mary's Academy or Jesuit.
Yeah.
And that school doesn't have the team that you want to participate in, I believe you can actually play in your local district's team. So as long as you live in that boundary. So, like, if you live in Beaverton and you go.
So they drop basketball. She wants to play.
Uh-huh.
Boys basketball. So if she were in this district here, she would be able to play?
I think she would be able to play at the public school.
Okay.
So, I just thought it was kind of a bummer, but I'll be interested to see what happens with that. So, in other news, I'm going to start this with a question because I read this a couple of times and I was like, wow, what's the strangest thing that you've encountered like at a doctor? Like, that would make you, give you pause to think like maybe that doctor isn't 100%. Doesn't have all their faculties, if you will. Is there anything like that?
I'm always like, because now I only go to the legacy doctors because that's all I know. But whenever I go to like a dentist or any kind of medical person, I'm always looking around their waiting room to be like, what are they about?
Okay.
Do they have a water feature? Do they have a lot of fancy chairs? Am I paying for all this stuff?
Okay.
You go to the dentist, they give you tea and all this stuff. And I'm like, there's a giant fish tank. And I'm like, I'm
tropical
I
fish.
Just, I'm looking for a dentist, you know?
So would you give pause If you found out that the person that was performing surgery on you was 89 years old?
Yep.
Okay. Well, there is a woman in Russia who is still actually doing surgery. And it has pictures of her. I tweeted this out. She's adorable. Okay. And she's been doing this forever.
I don't care. No, she's not my doctor.
Okay. But
sorry, I'm discriminating.
They interviewed a person who basically was like, look, I'm sorry. I'm sure you do a great job, but I just don't think that you could, you know, be particularly steady with the scalpel. And she basically kind of did these things with her fingers. And the person was like, oh, all right. You're still going strong. So I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. On one hand, I think it's fantastic. But I think if I were a patient, I would probably give pause.
Yeah.
For sure.
You're 89.
I know.
Okay.
But she says being a doctor is what is keeping her alive. Because
what kind
her
of surgery are we talking about?
It didn't go into detail.
She wants to do a vasectomy on me and she's 89. No. Sorry. You know?
She looks like a lovely lady.
Is she a dermatologist and she's 89?
No, she's doing... It looks...
You know, then we have a conversation about
yeah.
it. Just kind of maybe I ask her a few questions.
Mm-hmm.
What year is it? What, mm-hmm. you know... I'm sorry, you're 89. I love you. That's a great life. You should be off enjoying your life. You shouldn't be doing surgery on people.
I know. I thought it was... I was laughing when I was reading it. She's been doing it for 68 years, so I imagine... I imagine she's pretty good at it.
Yeah.
So...
I guess. I think there becomes a point where you go... You're at your prime, though.
Yes.
You know?
And then you... Just like Musburger.
Then you're losing
uh-huh.
things.
Well, I'm just saying. Mm. She's still going strong. I don't know. In other news, we talked about this yesterday, the ongoing feud with LeBron James and Charles Barkley.
Why do you say it like that?
Because there's this little kid that does that.
Oh,
did
okay.
you hear about that kid?
No,
I'll find
no,
that
but I just
time.
Let you do it. I always thought, like, why is she doing Do you know why she's
do you know,
doing that?
Do you know why this? I'm doing that, Gliss?
Anybody
You've
else?
Heard that kid who does
no,
that.
No, I don't know anything about
right,
that.
I'll find it.
Do you know? No, he says no.
Okay.
So you're in, you've always done it. I let you do it.
LeBron James.
Yeah, I just
and
thought it was your
why?
Thing.
No. There's this little kid that did it. I'll find it and tweet it out.
All
I
right.
do probably a really bad impersonation of it. But anyway, of course, Charles was at a bar and he took over the DJ booth. I think Kellen might have it for me here. Let it rip, Kellen.
LeBron James.
All right.
Yeah, he does it better.
Yeah. yours is a little
LeBron
bit,
James.
I don't know what that is.
Okay. I just amuse myself. So, okay. So he was at a club and he took over the DJ booth and he had some words. Ready?
Yep.
All right. I got to find it.
LeBron took over the booth or the kid?
Oh, what did I say? No, Charles Barkley.
Oh, okay.
I'm hitting
Every
it.
Day I wake up, and this is for all you haters out there. So, listen, for the next 5 songs, have fun and have a great time. And for all you haters, y'all.
Yeah. So,
nice.
I don't know. Shots fired, I guess. Again, I don't know what's going on with those two
he
guys.
He was drunk for sure.
Well, I gave Gliss the clip and I said, can we even use this? And he goes, well, I got to work my magic on it, but he did a good job.
Wow.
So. Uh-huh.
He's having some drinks,
dropping F-bombs.
That's okay.
Yeah, whatever. I thought you might want to hear it. In Alaska, now this has happened to me before. You ever be on those horrible conference calls and you can hear people in the background and they're making noise and you just want to scream at them, mute your phone so we don't have to listen to you.
Yeah.
And then they're doing all that. Well, some idiot went into the bathroom and he flushed the toilet on a conference call with like 60 people.
Whoops. I guess that there would be a 1 in 60 shot of figuring it out who it was.
Well, yeah. Yeah. So that caused a bit of a stir. So I thought that was pretty funny too. So, and I tweeted this out last night because we're getting ready for the big game on Sunday. Melissa McCarthy, who is one of my favorite comedians, I think she could essentially read the phone book and I would laugh. She's in a new Kia commercial and it's basically kind of, you know, paying tribute to the environment. I thought it was really clever. I did see it on another show last night, but if you haven't had an opportunity to look at that, go ahead and check out my Twitter feed, Kiki Reads the News. It's pretty funny. Did you see it? You don't look at any of my tweets,
yeah,
do
I
you?
Do. Yeah, I'm
you?
On Twitter right now.
Uh-huh. Did you watch it?
I'm on Twitter right now with some idiot who... I was dealing with some idiot, and the subject matter is he is trying to say that the Oregonian is dead.
Oh, boy.
The newspaper's dead. And he's saying, it literally started with him taking exception to my column on Willie Taggart this morning. And now he is saying, it's been years since I read the newspaper. And what I want to tweet, but I'm not, is I want to tweet, you're so stupid that you don't know that reading Oregon Live is reading the newspaper. Right. But I'm not going to tweet that.
Right.
I'm going to say Oregon Live is the newspaper.
This is funny because I got the notification on my phone. I saw that tweet, and Dustin and I were just laughing about this. I was reading him the thread over here. So
my favorite thing to do is always to take a screenshot of, say, like Wikipedia or the Oregon Live website that says a subsidiary of the Oregonian or whatever.
The guy doesn't realize it. And I don't want to out him because I don't know him, and
maybe he doesn't. Maybe he's 89 and he's still performing surgery.
Or sometimes I wonder if people have all their faculties there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I just,
it's sort of like people saying, "I don't like Obamacare, but I love the Affordable Care Act."
Yeah,
you know,
people who tell me they don't. I hear people say, "I don't watch movies anymore," but they watch on Netflix or on demand.
Right, right.
And
okay.
What they mean is they don't go to the theater anymore. It's a Pez dispenser. You're still getting the candy, okay?
That was a big thing in college where I would try to talk to a friend about a show, and they would be like, "Oh, I don't watch television."
Yeah.
But you've seen the show, right? Oh, yeah, I have Netflix. Oh, I didn't realize you were better than me.
Yeah.
That's what's implicit.
That
there.
Is exactly right.
Somebody
that's
asked
exactly
me
right.
the other day, something like 58 million people read Oregon Live at one point in the last year or whatever. It's just like a huge audience. And then people will go, "Newspapers are dead." And I'm like, no. The mechanism has shifted. You're not lining your birdcage. You're not starting a fire with it. It's Oregon Live. It's on Twitter. It's on your phone. You're reading it. That's how you're getting your news. That's how you know about what's going on with Willie Taggart or whatever. You're reading the newspaper, you
mm-hmm,
idiot.
Mm-hmm. People are like that, though, you know?
And then they got the better one is that, you know, "I don't care what you think," is people will tweet at me. It's like, I don't care that you think that, but
apparently they do because they wouldn't be tweeting you.
They follow me.
Mm-hmm.
They follow me. And then they say that. And I'm going, look, you and 55,000 other people don't care. So move on. All right.
I love it.
What else you got?
I also tweeted out, and this happens all the time, but I didn't realize, when they go back and they go to former Olympic venues and you see like how dilapidated all the buildings are, that type of thing. And, you know, a lot of times they're going back 20 years, 30 years. CNN put out a thing and it shows the Rio Stadium just from 6 months. And it's like it looks like the Olympics happened there 10 years ago. There are sections of seats that are gone. The grass is all funky. And I just wonder, I don't understand sort of. And maybe you can help me with this because I know you've been to a few Olympics, but I understand they put all this money into a venue, but certainly there's something that the city can use that venue for, or tax dollars will continue to do that to draw people. I just don't get that.
Yeah, I saw that too. It's sad. And it's happened. It happens at post-Olympics every Olympic Games. But it's like they build these great facilities and then they just go dilapidated and they fall into disrepair. It's sad. It's sad. Like they've now gone towards building buildings that will be able to be folded up. They're temporary,
mm-hmm.
which I think is probably a better solution if you're really not going to commit to maintaining the building. The same thing happened to the Crow's Nest after the Beijing Olympics. It's like dust covered.
Yeah. What are you going to do with that? I guess. Yeah. It's sad to see.
Yeah.
And okay, I have another follow up to a story I brought you earlier in the week regarding Heinz and their push to have Monday as a national holiday. So you get the day off because Heinz is giving all of their employees the day off and they have this petition that you can sign and they reached 50,000 yesterday and their goal is 100,000. So I don't know if they're going to make it by Sunday, but I'm certainly in favor of it. I don't know.
I'm dealing with a troll.
Oh, you see, you're not. Yeah. So I get this is my subtle way of saying I'm not coming to work on Monday. What do you think, Kellen?
I'm just going to say, John, as somebody who's been on both sides of the trolling on Twitter, the what you're looking for is the response. Because if I get some, you know, B-list actor to take time out of his day to respond to me, that just validated everything I said. You know what I mean?
So I shouldn't respond to anybody on Twitter.
That's the first rule is don't feed the trolls.
The weird
thing
is half these guys on Twitter that are trolls are, they're not even real people. They're like paid by, you know, organizations to troll you. Like this is a corporate thing that goes on. This guy on Twitter has tweeted 23 times. The vast majority of them are at me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's weird.
I had somebody, the Chicago Bears retweeted me once when I said that the 2013 Seahawks were the 1985 Bears. Just like glory once, never again. And the same thing happened. I started seeing these eggs, you know, the no profile picture.
Yeah.
And the only, like they created an account just to hassle me.
That's
like,
crazy.
I figured the front office is behind it.
All right. So from now on, I had a mantra before where I would not respond to people on Twitter for a while. But you know, today I was kind of in the mood.
Sometimes if you quote the tweet, and then it appears on your own account.
Yeah.
You can just let the listeners take care of them.
They are taking care of them right now.
Yeah. So. Well, isn't there? What's that saying? It's you don't want to wrestle with a pig. Because you're going to get dirty and the pig likes it or something like that.
I think you said it.
Yeah.
More or less.
Nailed it. Kind of.
Hey, I just want to call one more thing. We got this ice thing coming.
Yes.
Can I tell people about the deal that Corkers has put out for people?
Absolutely.
It's a local boot company that does phenomenal boots. They're like high end, go into REI boots. Four wheel drive for your feet, studded tires for your feet. We're talking about interchangeable soles with studded traction for snow and ice. Corkers.com. That's Corkers with a K. Why am I telling you about Corkers? Because Corkers is offering something for you as a BFT listener today. 20% off if you use the promo code STORM. And the BFT Foundation gets a donation from every sale. Same day shipping on most orders. Don't get left in the cold. Ice storm ahead. This is a great Portland company. It's a great story. Corkers with a K.com. Go there and use the promo code STORM or tell your friends, tweet about it. I've tweeted it. At BFT Foundation has tweeted it. You're helping kids in the community if you keep this sort of alive and get this out there. But Corkers.com, promo code STORM gets you 20% off and the kids of the BFT Foundation win. People on Twitter are just handing it to this guy. Ryan in the 360 is saying, hey, dummy, you're reading it on Oregon Live. That is the newspaper.
I love it.
Nick online says, if there's anyone who knows the internet, it's an internet tough guy.
we need to do a Shakespeare thing with this.
Oh, I think it's going to head that direction.
Tomorrow, I think, Dustin, let's recreate.
And I always love the guys who are like trying to think that they are taking an insult at me by telling me that they don't listen to the show or they don't read me. I don't care if you listen or read. I hope you do, but I don't care. Like, you know, that's if I was here to do an agreeable show that I hoped everybody listened to, I'd be doing elevator music.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just here to say what I think, debate things, kick things around. Maybe we have some fun.
Mm-hmm.
We eat a sandwich. We put on some boots.
Yeah, I
put on some boots.
I mumble through.
Yeah, you kind of.
I had marbles in my mouth today.
Yeah, because you ate, and then you were kind of doing the saliva thing too.
I thought maybe we were going to do one more story before Kiki read the news and. Yeah.
Now we're getting kicked out of here. All right. The irregular guys are coming up. That is Chop. That is Justin Myers. That's the guy known as Greg. Greg is efforting to become Greg. And more. Leave it right here.